6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm Chris at Lightforce. The voice joining you virtually, as always, and joined by the extra positive, superbly positive, positive forevermore, Anna Forsyth at 84603. Welcome, Anna.
Hi. Yeah, that's right. Super positive. Hashtag team playoffs.
Yeah, I should have actually introduced our show as the C4 Canucks Playoffs Podcast, if I recall, because that's what I had said I was going to do last episode.
Yeah, that's us. All in.
But then we got playoffs. That review that told us we're too negative, and now I'm just totally like thrown for a loop, because we get the too negative review the moment after we go and commit ourselves to being a playoff podcast. It's just,
yeah.
It's so crazy.
They missed the memo.
But thankfully, we got someone else on the show to bring some stability to things, and that is correct. We talked about it, I think, maybe kind of on our Patreon show. I don't think we've actually talked about it on the main show. But John Barr, who joins us again, it's been about a year since we last chatted. You now have a team full of players, which is pretty cool. And you can find John, obviously, on Twitter at NHL2Seattle. Welcome back, John.
It's great to be here. Yeah, I know. What do I do now that we have a team? I'm not sure.
Yeah, the NHL came to Seattle.
Yeah, I know. I need to rebrand.
Yeah.
It's no longer NHL 2 Seattle. It's NHL in Seattle.
There we go.
But yeah, we'll see.
So, and you know, the Sound of Hockey Podcast, which is the branding that we spoiled last time you joined us.
That's right. That's right. You were a big reveal. You leaked it to the masses.
Yeah.
That's all the millions and millions that listen to us too. Oh no, it's good to have you back, and we've obviously spoken to Darren and Andy over the past couple of months. The two of them joined us before the expansion draft, and now we've got you on to help us understand obviously what's going on down south there, but also to talk, which we'll get into when Seattle's going to drop that offer sheet on Elias Pettersson.
Any day now.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this before we clicked record, and John quite aptly said maybe we should save this conversation for the podcast, because I mean it's like the darkest timeline, and the Canucks are in a, you know, well, I don't know.
It's two and a half minutes in. Yeah, come on, Chris.
Oh, I mean, okay, so
it's so unlike hockey to be very positive, right? All fan bases are negative, aren't they? I mean, aren't we? Aren't we supposed to do that?
You've obviously not seen every angle of Canucks Twitter.
Well,
Kraken Twitter will be like.
It's all over the place already, to be honest. It really is. Like, you know, maybe we'll get into it, but like some people hate the roster, think they failed miserably in the expansion draft, and others are like, this is a legitimate playoff team, you know. And so literally the opinions are all over the place, which means like, oh, that means we're like a legitimate hockey market.
Yeah,
because nobody has consensus here.
The truth couldn't possibly be somewhere in the middle, right?
No. And everybody's an expert, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, that is the definitive sign of a hockey market when everyone's an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So you know what? Why don't we waste no further time? Let's start talking a little bit about the expansion draft and rewind. Before we actually get into the draft, let's, you know, because we will, out of curiosity, when we started to see the players' names come out a day-ish before the actual, production event, were you one surprised that was happening? Because there seems to be a collective like, oh my goodness, why would anyone leak this? But like, if there's something I've learned about the NHL, if it doesn't get leaked, it's not happening.
Yeah, and there's just way too many people to like keep it on the down low, and the teams that are losing players have no incentive to kind of keep the suspense. And, you know, I don't know if you remember it, but I do, because I've been talking about this whole thing for a while, is Vegas, we pretty much knew the roster ahead of time as well, because that was announced during the awards ceremony, like throughout the awards, the NHL awards show. And I remember we knew most of the players then. And so I was wondering how this thing was going to happen with this expansion draft production, you know, in Seattle. I don't know if you watched any of it, but
watched it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still watched, even though you probably knew everything.
I was working out during, but I still watched. Yeah. I still had an eye on it.
Yeah. It was, but what was very, you know, I would see friends at, so I went to the expansion draft, obviously, or maybe not so obviously, but I would see friends that I play hockey with or know that are hockey fans. I'm like, oh, so do you know? And a lot of them didn't know whether they were deliberately, you know, staying off Twitter, which is probably, if you really didn't want it spoiled, you probably should be off the internet. Disconnect, take a rest day in the woods for 24 hours. But for the most part, a lot of people didn't know. And what was so definitive is when the Montreal pick was announced, because Carey Price was exposed and they selected Cale Fleury, you literally heard a moan in the audience because everybody wanted Carey Price. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't there, so good for him. But there was like this subtle moan, right? Mm. Not like a big one, but clearly a lot of people were hoping that they would take Carey Price. I mean, thank God they didn't, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge contract to be saddled with. I think that maybe even if you did know all the picks, you just think, but that reporter could be wrong. And maybe it was a switcheroo, but like, I mean, if you...
Yeah, I forget. There was one, I think it was Chicago, we didn't know. That was like the one that was like, Detroit was the last one? Okay.
Yeah, that came out right before.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it was, but, you know, I don't know. You know, it was... The event was pretty cool because it was like a celebration of hockey in Seattle and kind of like a culmination of the event. There was obviously a lot of Seattle personalities there, but, you know, I ran into Tim and Todd Lewicki like in the crowd and, you know, they're having a good time and just appreciative of the moment, right, that we can finally announce a team. And it was pretty cool to see the players on stage and everything. It probably showcased really well on TV, right, being right on the water. And funny thing, that's walkable from my house. So I just literally walked down the hill seven blocks and was right there. So it was wild. And then when we left, you know, I walked kind of to a neighborhood bar about maybe a mile away, but there was a lot of other bars in on the way. And there was Kraken fans like in jerseys or gear, like celebrating or just drinking, or they were watching the draft from around there. That stuff didn't happen. Right. Like that is very unique. You know, during the Stanley Cup playoffs, that doesn't happen. You don't see that many hockey people. And so that's one thing that's crazy about it. It blows me away still as I walk around and there's just Kraken gear all over the place, where before 5 years ago, I'd see a random Chicago Blackhawks hat and I'd be excited like, oh, there's a hockey fan, and point to them like, you know, it's been pretty wild. It's. You know, again, it's not like Vancouver. It's not like some of these markets, but it's exceeding even my wildest dreams.
Yeah, that's a cool little preview of like game nights and stuff.
Absolutely.
But what I really liked about the expansion draft, yes, it was less exciting because we knew all the picks. But what's great about Vegas is they lean into Vegas and the whole showpiece element of that. And I thought it was very like PNW, like Seattle, like specific. It was cheesy, but it was fun, and like you got to lean into your like local area, and that's the amount of times they were in Pike Place was a lot, but you know, it was a good time, and I think you have to really lean into it if you're gonna make it.
So yeah, nationally that's what people see, right?
Yeah,
nationally that's what they see, and you know, there's not a Seahawks game that goes by where they don't show the market, somebody throwing a fish or the space needle or the water or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, like I never do that stuff anymore, but it's a good commercial for the city too.
Yeah, I, you know, thinking about the event and obviously watching it on TV, the moment Gary Bettman gets on stage and gets ceremoniously booed was a moment for me that, you know, really connected, knowing that Seattle understands NHL, you know, protocol. Mm-hmm. And I mean, okay, on the note, I mean, I can't speak to the sort of league commissioners are getting booed. Like, I can't say I watch a lot of basketball or NFL and what have you, but when I think about like the Super Bowl or NBA final and the commissioners handing the trophy to the owner, as they do in every other league, fans don't seem to boo. They cheer. In the NHL, well, they boo the heck out of Gary until such time as Gary's no longer in the picture, and then they cheer. Gary has embraced the boo, and I think even he was happy that the market understood the significance of how they needed to boo him, and that made how that makes Seattle look to the rest of the league.
You know, part of me always wish we cheered as like just to kind of do things different. Because I'll tell you what, the league doesn't come here without Gary Bettman. I mean, that's maybe stating the obvious, but if you go back to the Vegas expansion submission, when they were submitting to be in the league, Quebec City also submitted. And the league decided we're just going to Vegas. If they would have added Quebec City, and nothing disrespect to Quebec City, obviously a rabid hockey market, but if they would have awarded Quebec a team.
Yeah, Seattle's not in.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there was always a desire and a plan to get in Seattle. And I even asked Tim Lewicki this. Mike, is the league happy? And he's like, oh yeah, league's really happy with Seattle. We're adding value to the league, right? And that's one thing I honestly didn't see happening. I thought it would just grow and it'd be great for the league, but not like this. This is, you know, I don't know how much you're paying attention to up here, but we're doing things different. And I saw the practice facility. Oh my, last week. Oh my gosh, it's incredible. And supposedly the players are blown away with it, you know, because for one, it's brand new, right? So you're going to like want to kind of get it to the top of the league, because in 4 years, it's going to be not the top of the league. So you need to kind of like invest early, but it's amazing. Three sheets, literally another 8-minute drive from my house in the city. We don't have any sheets in the city itself. And so it's pretty amazing the amount of investment that the ownership group and this group in particular has put into it. So I know the league's happy with it. And so that's why I almost wish Seattle fans were like, screw it. We're going to be different. We're going to cheer obnoxiously for Gary Bettman, right? That I think that would have been a cool move, but clearly that's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, I doubt that would endear them to the rest of the league, but yeah, maybe that's
who cares. Fun. I don't care. So
I think it's endear themselves to the rest of the league's fans. But to John's point, right? If Seattle was different, because that's the thing we've talked actually, Anna and I, about this on our show, and we brought up with Darren and Andy as well, is that there is so much that Seattle's doing that we hope the Vancouver Canucks copy. Right. Like just as an organization, we're not talking about like asset management the hockey operations per se in the traditional sense. It's almost everything else that Seattle has been up to. And it's like, oh man, the Vancouver Canucks could become a better team as a result.
Well, I mean, more than the Canucks, like you say, the league, what Seattle's doing. Like we've talked about this. I mean, even on our last episode about like, you know, the case for diversity, the case for doing things differently, and how much markets could grow and hockey as a sport could grow if they really invest in that sort of stuff. And the work Seattle's doing, hopefully the NHL can see the value in it and start doing better work with the current crop of organizations league-wide and invest in better culture.
Yeah, and they're not afraid too, right? I think some are just a little hesitant to move the needle that quick. Where Seattle's starting fresh, so they can kind of really establish their baseline, right? Where, you know, kind of doing this big push to diversity, inclusion, you know, even recognizing Black Lives Matter. Like other organizations are probably terrified to to do that, even if they want to. And I think Seattle, being in Seattle, right, a Pacific Northwest town, we all know the political leanings of those areas, but it allows them to kind of really push the envelope and create their baseline where other teams are still trying to kind of move in that direction and without offending their base, right? Mm-hmm. Where if we offend people, Seattle offends people, who cares? We're selling out an arena and it's going to bring more people in, right? And that's what I think they're looking toward. And I really, you know, who knows long-term how this will all work, but it seems to be doing pretty well now.
Yeah.
The expansion draft, sort of on that note, you were there. I was a little shocked I didn't get to see you up on stage announce a pick or something like that.
Here's a quick thing. Did you get the simulcast? You must have got the simulcast of ESPN, right?
Yeah. Essentially Sportsnet was the ESPN broadcast that we got up here on Sportsnet.
So they had a clip from a bar, the Angry Beaver. I was actually in the video. It was pre-recorded. So you could have seen me. But it was pretty funny. I got a bunch of texts are like, oh, I thought you'd be at the event. I'm like, I am. It was just pre-recorded. So anyway.
No one is everywhere. Well, see, okay.
I'll concede. I remember that video.
Yeah.
I mean, hence I know the name of the Angry Beaver. Yeah. But I wasn't. See, I was waiting to see, like, I just had my mind. Well, we're going to see John on stage. He's going to go.
Well, you should have. Like, the reason we're all here in the first place.
From the such and such.
I think Marshawn Lynch is a bigger known personality than I am. So
that's just because they don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the pre-recorded part I totally got. Like, because I mean, I don't know how much traction it got down your way, but when the Toronto Maple Leafs fan leaked the one of the practice runs of their pick.
Right.
Was it Jared McCann or whatever?
Well,
it was Jared McCann, former Vancouver.
Now, who was the other guy that it was between Jared McCann and Kerfoot?
Oh, yeah.
So it was leaked as Kerfoot.
Yeah. Right?
We selected McCann, but it was leaked as Kerfoot. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that part of it was like, and that makes sense. That would be pre-recorded. Plus, Kevin Weeks.
Yeah. He was at every spot in the city.
Yeah. He was on stage and then all of a sudden he's like downtown. Which,
yeah.
You know, downtown, a minute later.
Space Needle, you know, climbing up Mount Rainier. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, thinking of the expansion draft, Cole Lind, who is the player that you told us, like way back in December, that Seattle would probably pick, was the player taken. I'm not going to suggest that I'm completely surprised, only because of the players that the Vancouver Canucks acquired, sort of post season.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, Anne and I had sort of come to the conclusion that the one that we thought might be in the mix and who the Vancouver Canucks would protect was Jake Virtanen.
Right.
But obviously, the Vancouver Canucks were not going to protect Jake Virtanen, which we thought, well, there you go. Cole Lind, why would they go and, you know, make him available? And then was it Dickinson? No.
Yeah, Dickinson was the one that pushed him out. Because they just said, yeah, sorry, bud. We're exposing you.
But like, I was thinking about this. Was there really any miss from the Kraken as far as the players that were made available? Like, I know you had talked about how fans were like, oh, I really wish you had taken Carey Price. But I mean, that contract is not a whole lot of fun for a team that, you know, potentially could have a ton of flexibility. Yes, you got a marquee goaltender, but.
Well, you know, there's a couple, you know, Max Domi was exposed and not selected. And then for the Columbus draft pick, I forget, who they selected because it was essentially an expiring UFA, somebody that was on a UFA that they just let to go to free agency. Mm-hmm. So there was obviously, they had no interest in Max Domi. So I wouldn't say that's a miss. And I kind of trust their judgment there. But one thing they did is they stuck to their guns about kind of maintaining that cap flexibility because, you know, Philadelphia exposed Jacob Voracek and also JVR. I thought they would select one of them because they can score goals, but it comes with an $8 or $9 million salary that they just didn't want to burden themselves with. So those were some of the surprises. And Tarasenko obviously was also exposed, but they're like, no, we don't need to take that gamble, to take that risk. I thought they would at least take one of them, right? And select, because they had plenty of room for one of those kind of risks. And yeah. So the one miss and the one thing I'm happy with the roster. I'm happy with a lot of the picks. There was nobody where I'm like, oh, they really should have picked that person. I knew that they had to let some people walk, right? That they had to draft people that were going to be free agents. I knew that was going to happen. So I expected a couple of those. So that was no surprise to like select and then let them walk. But I wanted more draft picks. That's the one thing I wish they acquired, because Vegas Select ended up kind of getting a hoard of draft picks. But, you know, maybe there just wasn't, I mean, I know the GMs just did not want to do any deals. I think it was like they were terrified to look bad.
Yeah. Down the road. I think more than anything, it was that. So
yeah,
even if a deal seemed decent, they were just like, no.
No, because people will pay attention to that forever, right? Just like they do. And the thing is, Vegas gets a little, well, I don't want to say they get too much credit, but there was a lot of side deals in that Vegas draft that people don't really talk about the full scope of the draft. Like Columbus, it's the William Karlsson. Everybody says William Karlsson. Well, William Karlsson only had like 6 or 7 goals the year before. Yeah. And Vegas took on the Clarkson contract, who would never play again.
Yeah.
Same thing with Shea Theodore and Anaheim. Like, it was Clayton Stoner's contract that went with it. That was kind of the incentive and kind of the chip that Anaheim offered to take that Clayton Stoner contract. But nobody talks about Clayton Stoner or Clarkson. So it's just kind of one of those things that, so the GMs remember how people discuss those deals, and like they get, because there's so much attention and focus around the expansion draft, they're probably a little gun shy. So.
Yeah. And I think people do tend to look at Vegas as a whole and the whole, every move they made that sort of to build up their roster rather than just the expansion draft. Like, so it kind of looks even better than it is, because they're just like, well, in, you know, 2 or 3 years, they built this team. But yeah, like, that's kind of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But even then, I think when we look at Vegas, there is this, in hindsight, and the success that they've had, that's almost rewriting history a little bit. When Vegas was making these deals at the time, I would argue that many people are like, okay, so they're just, all they're trying to do is start a rebuild. Like, again, they're building at new, but it's a rebuild. They're perfectly fine in a sort of a world of relative mediocrity. But they did hit, they swung to the fence and hit pretty much everyone out of the park. That doesn't happen every time, you know, that type of opportunity exists. Like Seattle, I think, was in a position where, yeah, they could have gone and swung for the fence many times, but is every one of those going to be out of the park like Vegas was able to pull off? On top of that, you have GMs who, to your point, John, are afraid of looking bad, and probably whether they have good opportunity to pull the trigger on a deal where a pick or something goes along with a player or two, the worry that, am I giving up something that I don't know I'm ready to give up? And by the way, I remember, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever it was, this happened. Like, I you know, think that plays into it. And then one big difference is a salary cap that is stagnant. Like, even if you make that mistake, like, let's say Vegas pulls the wool over your eyes, well, at least, you know, not only did you get the cap flexibility, it's going to go up and you can probably buy your way out of the mess. A team like the Vancouver Canucks,
yeah,
you know, has no ability to buy themselves out of a potential mess if they go and, you know, work a deal. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's two different environments too, right? GM's learned a lot, and then the flat cap is just so unique. But that's kind of why I expected a little bit more trades and more draft picks accumulated. I mean, because if you look at Vegas, they don't have any kind of really great prospects in the pipeline right now. I mean, Peyton Krebs is good, but like none of them have made the team necessarily. White Cloud is probably an exception or kind of one of the few bright spots in their drafting. But they also used those draft picks to get Pacioretty. They used to get Mark Stone. So that was the value that they had in those draft picks. So they didn't necessarily see those draft picks come to the franchise, but they were able to use that to kind of bolster their team and kind of make them serious contenders. So that's the only kind of being completely honest, I wish we accumulated more draft picks, but I'm happy with the team. I like the youngness. I like the cap flexibility. And what's also interesting is all the free agents that signed with Seattle during the negotiation period. And then after, right. That's something that Vegas did not have. They drafted one pending free agent, and it was from Calgary, Derek Englund. That was the only UFA they drafted and signed, where Seattle got Oleksiak, Larson, and Driedger. So again, totally different environment. And I think Vegas's success also opened the door for free agents to come to Seattle, because they're like, oh, they're not going to stink right away. They actually might be pretty good. And if it's a franchise that really wants to invest in the team and kind of do things right, it might be a good place to be for a bit. That's just maybe that's me projecting my desire that free agents are coming here, but that's there's obviously a trend here.
That's a fair point. I think, with that you raised, the one of the difference being the ability to sign. So, I mean, Seattle was able to negotiate with any free agent that they wanted. And for those that don't know, if they happen to sign a player through free agency from that team prior to expansion draft, that was their pick. So you sort of got the one opportunity, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're not having conversations with everyone.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I had not really considered that opportunity did afford Seattle, maybe I wouldn't say a critical head start, because, conversations never happen between people and people, which is why magically, contracts are signed within a minute of free agency. But
magically,
and faxed through the NHL head office.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm just wondering right now, actually, more on the signing for agencies, and that's because I actually don't know what state tax like in Washington.
There's
a sales tax, but like is
the no state tax no state tax? Income tax. So that's one of the benefits that we like to broadcast and advertise. So thanks for mentioning it, Chris.
No problem.
Yeah, just working for the Seattle Tourist Board out here. But
that's what I thought, because like I know, like I, as a tourist who's gone down, I see this the sales tax. I
yeah,
mean, I remember, like I made a trip down to Portland, and I was like trying to scratch my head, like why does anyone shop in Vancouver? Just cross the bridge,
right?
And there's no sales tax, and I mean we're talking like 20% shift in your
yeah. Here, that's Vancouver, Washington, for people that
might have never watched. Yeah, sorry. I know. I should remember these things. Yeah. But no, like, I mean, I'm just now wondering, like, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you now have a team that can compete for free agents, and you can't just sell sort of the market per se. I mean, the region that, like, no matter how you shake it, there is a income tax that you're going to pay here, even if you happen to go and reside in the enclave of Point Roberts, Washington.
That's right. Many of players
have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And head coaches.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, because that's definitely something we've sold players on before. Like, I've always thought it must be so depressing to play for like Arizona, where the team's bad and you have to live in Arizona, or like somewhere in the Midwest, but like, or maybe Buffalo, New York, but now I'm just making friends everywhere. But
yeah, I know, clearly.
Like Vancouver, it was always just like, you get to live in Vancouver. It's beautiful. There's hiking everywhere. There's the ocean, the mountains. And now it's like, well, there's just wildfires and smoke and the team's really bad, but
And there's like another city that's pretty equivalent in Seattle that you don't have to pay income or state income tax. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And the team's on the up and
Oh, come on. Vancouver's still an awesome place. I mean, I think that's desirable place for a lot of people. I know you're just saying that, but
yeah, no, we do like living here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Anna, we need to be more positive.
Oh, sorry.
Remember
that's right. That's right.
Last show to be more positive.
Yeah.
you know, just before we move on from the expansion draft, you had sort of talked about the Lowkies having a really good time, but it seemed like a party atmosphere. Is that fair to say? I mean, we were obviously seeing what was shared via broadcast, but as someone who was there a lot of sort of a lot of electricity, a lot of buzz?
Totally. It was pretty awesome. I think the players were kind of blown away at the fans just for a new market. One funny takeaway is they were massively underestimated the people interested in drinking beer because the lines were like absolutely insane. And I got there like right when it opened and there was a little line, but by the time I like was halfway through my beer in the beer garden, it was like there was a line. Wow. Just, I mean, it was, you know, 100 meters long. Of the Pacific Northwest. Yeah.
Come on. And like big events like after COVID, it seems.
And I think hockey is a little bit more beer friendly too. So I think that was probably they underestimated true. That. It could have been a limitation or because it was in this park, there might have been a limitation on how much beer they could sell or how many beer stands. But I think they could have probably quadrupled the number of actual sales if they were just more efficient.
Yeah, I thought it was great to see like all the fans that were just like stoked and ready to go. I mean, I was shocked at the time, but there's actually been this cricket competition in the UK that's pretty controversial, but the team teams like they've just made them up, like they have no fan base, and yet like you'd get people in the shirts the day of the games, and I'm just like, where have you even bought those? Like these are teams that they've just made up in like a marketing room. But I think people are excited when they see like a good product. And whatever way you want to slice it, we haven't got on the ice yet, but the way they've built it up, it's like, yeah, that's something worth investing in.
I do think there's a lot of hockey fans here that are, you know, I've talked to people that move here from hockey markets that are hockey fans, and it's like hard to follow hockey when you move here because there's no team and there's no kind of like connection to your home team. Like you have to kind of go out of your way. Like you can't be like a casual hockey fan. And so there's a lot of old school hockey fans that I think old school as in like they had teams like 5-10 years ago and they don't know the names that are being drafted too. So I think that was another takeaway is like people are like, you know, who's Cale Yarncroc? Who's Jonas Donskoy? Right. Like these are decent players, right? These are pretty good players. You know, they're not a household name by any means, but they're not the recognizable name like Carey Price or, you know, Tarasenko. Like those are names that people recognize because their heyday was 5-10 years ago, or like that's when they were really good and that's what they remember. So that's kind of was an interesting byproduct of this thing and observing kind of fan behavior.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
The other component that took place, there was the expansion draft, followed very quickly by the NHL entry draft, and Seattle was afforded a nice pick, not being gifted first overall, because apparently giving an expansion franchise first overall just out of the gate is frowned upon, but you know, being able to pick number two was equally as good. We see the Kraken take Matty Beniers. He was definitely high on many people's draft boards. Was he high on yours?
Well, I think he was pretty obvious he was going to go number two for a long time, at least the last couple of months leading into it. And you know, I don't pretend to be an expert prospect analyst, but I read a lot on them. I know, you know, we have a Robert Cron, who's the director of amateur scouting, on the podcast. Former Canuck. Is that right? Yeah. We had him on the podcast and we asked him, you know, like how many games does he need to see somebody to feel confident? And then I said, and then a follow-up question is how many Michigan games we went to. And he answered, he's watched every single Michigan game.
Yeah.
Now that's pretty, I mean, there was Owen Power, obviously, and Matty Beniers. So it was obvious there's a lot to watch in Michigan, but it seemed like Beniers was the consensus number two as far as consensus could go, behind Owen Power. So if somehow Buffalo didn't select Owen Power, I was pretty convinced it was going to, you know, it would have been Owen Power if he would have slipped. But, you know, I think the organization, he does have like leadership qualities, and that's kind of an interesting aspect of it. And I'm not sure how much that, you know, weighs into selecting a player, but I think it's somebody they can kind of be the future face of the franchise in this Matty Beniers. He's a pretty good kid. He's a fun kid. He's good on interviews without being too polished and dry and boring. So we're excited about him, but he is more than likely going back to Michigan this year. And I think we only have a couple more weeks to where it's pretty much final decision. So, cause they would have to sign him before he starts school at the end of August.
Right. And are you disappointed by that? Or are you kind of feeling like another year of conditioning and developing might be a good thing?
It's one of those things where I'd like to see him sooner, but I also don't know what's best for his development. You know, everybody says, oh, you can't, you know, you can rush him too early and so he should stay back. But I don't know if there's any data to support that, because we never know, like, we can't like have a, you know, have Matty Beniers go the NHL route and then have Matty Beniers go back to college route. But somebody like Cale Makar is a good proxy, right? Where, you know, he stayed an extra year in college and came out pretty strong. So not that I'm comparing him, obviously different position, but college isn't a bad option. And you know, there's a lot of practice time in college because the schedule is just not as intense as even the WHL CHL leagues. But so I'm sure he'll do what's best and kind of make the most of whatever opportunity he takes or what path he takes next. I don't have a strong feeling that there's a desire to rush him. I don't, you know, I think Seattle is a little weak on the center position, but yeah. I don't think he's going to really make it that much stronger in his first year. So I'm not really worried about that either.
The going back, I mean, I would have to presume Michigan's going to be going, you know, deep into the Frozen Four, considering their team. You've got the opportunity to play for your Hobie Baker. I mean, we're accustomed here in Vancouver seeing the team go to the college route. And was it Besser, Hughes?
Stetcher.
Who am I forgetting?
Well, Stetcher's a free agent, like, but.
Yeah, but like, I mean, we're seeing sort of the longer term college players then, you know, find their way end of season, sign their deal, burn that year. Everyone loves it. Move on. I just wonder if you're the first round pick of a new expansion franchise, might there be added pressure if you go and make the big club when you could more sort of ease yourself in, still work on your development? Cause let's say it doesn't work out well. You can't go back to college once you've gone and played professionally, right? Like, it's not like we're talking about, oh, he'd go back to junior. I mean, he could,
but
that's an entirely different scenario.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel that going back to college, well, your points are very sound. I just kind of wonder if maybe easing him in that route, bring him at the end of the season or what have you, get him in year two.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sounds very accurate. I don't know. You know, you look at Jack Hughes's year after his, and it wasn't very good. I don't know, you know, maybe it was the pressure, but he's somebody that kind of underwhelmed his first year. And you're right, there is some sense of like, you know, there's, let's kind of ease you in by doing the, and kind of getting you at the end of the season too, right? If they're in contention, because then it's like, oh, we're all excited to see this new kid, but there's no real expectations, like the future of our franchise is dependent on these games he's playing right now. So I think there's something to that. And, you know, I'd love to see him, but at the same time, like I think it's realistic that he'll probably be better served going back to college. At least that's the consensus right now.
And I think as exciting as an NHL like career is, it's all a bit, you know, formless, whereas like he has a college career, like he's playing with his friends, he's playing in like empty arenas. You want to, like, if he can get in front of like full arenas, Michigan crowd, win a national championship, like I do think that makes a difference psychologically to players. And if you get him after that, like I think that could be like even better for him.
Yeah, and like what a bummer of an experience of not really having a college, you know, as freshman, you know, he was supposed to go to Harvard. I don't know if you know that. He was supposed to go to Harvard, but the Ivy League canceled their season. So he transferred to Michigan, right? But yeah, he really didn't have like the full college experience. And then Michigan, because of COVID, to positive COVID tests, they had to withdraw from the Frozen Four. So, I mean, what a bummer first college year, right? I'm sure he had a great year, right? A World Juniors, obviously. But man, that kind of stinks. Like if he really wanted to live that college experience, you know, there's something to be said about letting him go back and enjoying that because college is fun.
Yeah.
Right. And once you're in the pros, you can't like, you're kind of not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
In a way,
and he's not like this, you know, because of the draft and the kind of caliber. It's not like, oh, we're going to make you a star kid. Like, come play for the NHL club and you'll be like our star player. Yeah. Like, he's not in that caliber yet. So,
no, definitely. That's definitely.
Well, as we look to wrap up Rewind here, I think we would be remiss not to talk about a little Vancouver Canucks news, which has been aptly titled a tidy bit of business, which is not a use of terms that we're accustomed to here in Vancouver under the current regime. Jason Dickinson has signed a contract. He's avoiding arbitration. It's a 3-year deal. I think it's $2.65 million per. Arguably for the money he's being paid, for the term he's being paid, for the role he's going to be playing. This is new Jim Benning. This is like Jim Benning post free agency somehow turned a corner. Jim Benning, what had us thinking Canucks are making the playoffs, Jim Benning, but arguably does take away close to $3 million that is going to be necessary to sign two very important players in Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Not to suggest it's not possible. It'll likely happen, but I have to give credit to Jim. He got a good deal done with a player who arguably has upside.
I think that's true. And like, let's be real. Jason Dickinson's contract didn't take away from PD and Quinn's contract. It was all the dumb moves Jim made before that.
Yeah, I know.
So like, you know, we expected Jason Dickinson to go 2.5 to 3 million, maybe close to 3. So like, this is a good deal. We need center depth big time. We didn't draft in the first round, so we don't even have it in the pipeline. Yeah, so it's necessary, and it's actually at a decent value, which is unusual.
Who is he going to play with? I assume he's third center, right?
Yeah.
He'd have to be, but that, I mean, some of the lineups that we've seen. So Travis Green was actually chatting. Was he on the VanCast, Anna? He was with VanCast?
I can't remember.
There's been some really crazy line combinations spat out. There's this thought that JT Miller is going to somehow be a center again.
Yeah, which I don't think is going to happen.
But I would have to think it's third line. And if it's third line,
it kind of depends what Podkolzin does in camp, because the idea is that he's going to explode on this team, but and maybe he'll force himself into a second line job, but
I think the prayer is that he's going to explode on this team.
Yeah, I mean, it depends who you listen to. If you listen to Canuck's conversation, he's the best player you've ever seen.
Do you think he's a lock to make the team?
From a marketing perspective, sure.
Sure, but I think he's like had a good season. He's done a lot with the sometimes like limited opportunity he's been given, so...
Yeah. I'd say Pods, it's the position is his to lose.
Right.
I think would be a better way to put it. Like if he comes in and has an okay camp, that's fine. He doesn't have to come, I think, to camp to like
prove
shock anyone to make the team. He's going to be given that opportunity for two very important reasons. One, they need some skill with a little bit of spunk. And two, they can't afford much of anything else.
An ELC player would be ideal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it depends. Sorry, it depends on his contract, because I think that pushes Pearson down to third line, which isn't bad, like, at all. I think Pearson's a third line player in a good team. He's a second line player on the Canucks, which is kind of says a lot. And it might look like a more normal team, at least from the forward perspective. Well, fourth line players on fourth line contracts playing on the fourth line.
Yeah. But you see, I just want to point out, you were positive there because you said Pearson on a good team is third line. So if he's on the third line, that tells us that
Vancouver good is a team. Good yeah. team.
Honestly, yeah. though,
there's
I do
a,
think
a math property there.
Yeah. From the forward perspective, it looks okay. Canucks look okay.
Yeah.
Too good. As long maybe as you score, good.
You don't win games by not or by saving goals. You win games by scoring goals.
Well, yeah, the Canucks need to do both. We just decided we don't need a defense. Just leave it up to the goalie to save the goals.
Yeah. We'll take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So as we get into half full, half empty here, the topic we talked about at the start of the show when we were talking about before we even clicked record, has Elias Pettersson's offer sheet been drafted up? John, we know you're on the inside and you probably contributed to the conversation or are they just waiting to see what happens?
Well, you know, if you would have asked about a potential offer sheet for Pettersson a month ago before the expansion draft, you know, I would have laughed. Like, no chance, right?
But we asked Andy. He laughed.
Yeah.
He totally did. But then he bought into the idea that we were floating his way.
Well, except now, right? Like, an area of weakness is center depth. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think the Kraken roster is pretty good right now. If they were to add a elite centerman, it could be a really good team. Now, that said, so I guess what I'm saying is we are probably closer to an offer sheet than we were 6 weeks ago. Okay. But it just doesn't make sense at all for Seattle to do that with their draft picks and kind of squander a potential draft picks. And you know, just if somehow Vancouver doesn't match it, right, and then they take the draft picks for compensation – Seattle has nothing in the cupboard right now. Nothing. Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, sure, Matty Beniers, but like you need years of that to kind of really make sure you get a big surefire hit in that first round. You can't, you just can't do that right now. I like, you know, maybe they prove me wrong, but I just don't see that happening. But who else would do it around the league? Do you have you guys speculated about who might?
Well, there's only a handful, like based on what PD's probably going to, like if you're going to offer sheet, you're not going to come in with a bridge, like the Canucks will match anything that's not big term, big money. Cause big term, big money is a problem for the Canucks. Cause they just, the cap is their enemy at that point. So when we look at the compensation that's required, there are only really a handful of teams that have the picks. And then we start looking at the cap situation for these teams. There aren't too many. The reason I sort of look at Seattle, I think your point about there being an empty cupboard is reason enough as to why Seattle doesn't do it, unless they want to make a splash and have, you know, it be the talk
of doing things different. Right.
It would definitely be different, but I think you're right. When you say that it's splashy, I think that's where you kind of look at Seattle and be like, is that the way they've built their team? No, not really. Like, yeah, they are smart. They know they need draft picks. Even if they're like, it would make a
look at what Arizona just did this last season. They went from no first round draft pick because they had it obviously forfeited due to their malfeasance in scouting, practicing, training, or trying people out. To what did they have? I think they had at 1.2 picks.
Well, I mean, yes, we generously donated ours to the pools.
Well, no, I know, but like Arizona, what did Arizona do this past draft? In fact, the past couple of drafts, they've gone and said, we're going to rebuild. Hey, who's got bad deals? We'll take them. Just send them to us. We've now learned that no return is a thing. Like, you can actually just send things to other teams and it's perfectly fine. Just take it all. We don't want anything back. And not to suggest that Seattle would go full Arizona, but let's say Seattle does give up all of those first round picks. What is it that Seattle still would have access to help empower themselves to get picks back? They've got some cap space to help, you know. And again, I think it's about like, what's the vision? Are we talking about, you know, we want to be a playoff team or a playoff performer within 2-3 seasons? Yet I don't think the PD splash makes sense,
right?
Because you're relying on a lot. But if you're like, yeah, you know, we're good, here's our vision, we want to be the performer within 3 or 4 years, by then you'll have gotten your first round picks will be coming back momentarily. You'll have probably been able to weaponize some of your cap space, get a few more picks. Yeah, you've got some expiring contracts to get out of the way. Like, I just feel that Seattle's got, to your point, that ability to start in from a baseline that no other team has.
And the only thing that would count, another thing that might count in the favor of an offer sheet, is that out of anyone, Seattle maybe don't buy into the NHL nonsense, which includes don't off sheet people because it's bad manners. Like, which I would say is complete nonsense. Like, outside of this particular situation where please don't steal our star player, offer sheets are fun. They should just happen way more often.
So, speaking of offer sheets, and this came up during the expansion draft, you know, Shea Weber, the contract that he's currently on was actually an offer sheet from the Philadelphia Flyers. I didn't know that. Like, literally, they're the one who kind of offered him the sheet. That's what Nashville matched. And then he would be traded. Interesting.
I do remember that now. I had forgotten about it. But yeah, it's not. Like, it's not that common, but it's fun when it happens.
Yeah, it is.
But I mean, the whole Vanacek back and forth, I think that kind of shows Seattle can do nonsense if they want. Like, they can do, they have a few tricks up their sleeves. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if they're that disruptive. I think they want to stay young and and that means kind of make sure that they can hold on to those draft picks. I know. You know, if you look at Carolina as a proxy for how Ron Francis builds a franchise, it's from within, right? And young prospects, hold on to them, develop them, and kind of make a run together as a unit instead of kind of like adding. The one thing he didn't do very well was the goaltending in Carolina. But
it never quite worked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to make it very clear, Anna and I are not suggesting that PD should get offered. And I mean, our hope is that the Vancouver Canucks would match. It's just like, we look at the Canucks cap space right now. So after that Dickinson deal, and this is before LTIR, they have, I think, 13 million.
Yeah. 13 point something
in space. And the difficulty is that if they were to sign those deals, they can exceed only by 10%. Until the start of the season, at which point they have to be cap compliant, and they can't access LTIR until the season starts, and that's the Ferland value. Like, there is some cap gymnastics that the Vancouver Canucks will have to jump through, even if none of this, you know, none of these hijinks actually come to fruition. It's just an interesting situation that they found themselves in, and I think the scuttlebutt is the Canucks are still worried that someone comes in and disrupts things by saying, hey, Elias, we've got a team that's going to be in the playoffs next season.
Yeah, but what team? That's, I mean, cause I, and this is off top of my head is, your New Jersey, mm-hmm. like Buffalo, those teams have cap space.
Well, they're not going to be like they're contenders.
He's not going to want to go there, right?
Well, I mean, I'm just looking. So there's actually, as without looking at cap space, I mean, right now there is, let's see, there's actually quite a few teams, 24 teams that would have the four first round picks. I mean, and again, if it wasn't, so this is where it gets funky, is if the deal is less than max. And again, if it's not term, then, you know, this is where I feel that then Vancouver Canucks match. But if we go, let's say, one tier lower, where it's the two first, one second, one third, there are only 11 teams that, and again, without cap space on a play that can do it. You've got the Coyotes, the Sabres, the Hurricanes, the Stars, the Red Wings, the Wild, the Habs, the Predators, the Devils, the Senators, the Kraken. Of those teams, who is going to be a contender? Seattle, I'd say Seattle, based on what we see. I think there's some potential there, but is Seattle going to win a Stanley Cup or threaten?
They're probably not. Mortgaging the future by doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
They really are.
Sens are not going to be there. Devil's not there. Why would you go to Arizona? Buffalo's not going to be it. The Hurricanes, I doubt it.
Minnesota.
Their rebuild.
Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota. If Montreal's a weird one. But yeah, Minnesota.
If Kaprizov doesn't sign.
Well, that's a big thing, right? I mean, you guys were discussing this on your recent show, and I think I have to kind of side with your side of the discussion that you guys came to that, I mean, it was a good year, but like it's been 1 year of a shortened season.
56 games. Yeah. Come on.
Like, chill out. I know Minnesota's just 10 million? But like.
Forget about it. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that would be a very interesting scenario, right? And I think Minnesota's like, you know, Bill Guerin wants to be a little disruptive, probably more than traditionally is seen in the hockey world. So I think there's, I mean, you know, if I was to put money on anybody, it'd probably be the Minnesota Wild.
Sure. But
I'd say safe money is back with the Canucks without any offer sheet shenanigans. So
the only positive, I'm being positive. And the way I'm looking at it.
We're all being positive. Yeah.
As bad as the front office has been with like value and contracts, their, you know, new AGM he's been there a year now, just over a year, Chris Gear, like he's pretty good at the legal side of things and making numbers work. So that's what I'm looking at. And just.
Well, no. And I think the Canucks will be able to, like, Chris Gear will be able to figure things out money wise. Like, he seems to be on his toes as far as how to manipulate the cap to the best advantage. But, it is just a scary thing to even consider the possibility. And the longer that this goes on, I think is when people begin to get more and more antsy because, you know, it's not unheard of to see someone sign an RFA deal just before the start of a season. I mean, technically free agents are still available and teams can make adjustments. It's just, for me, I wonder which, like the Canucks would have to prioritize the PD deal.
Over the Hughes.
Over Quinn.
Well, but
then does that mean they hold off on signing Quinn for the sake of PD? And I just don't feel they can do that either. So it's like, it's just that Quinn deal. Like the moment that comes in, every team knows what they can do that you can't. So.
Well, you made me think about this. Is there a scenario where one of those guys isn't signed to start the season, but once Ferland goes on LTIR, that opens up cap space to sign the deal and get cap compliant? Like, is that.
Then you have a player who's not gone to camp. Like, it's. There's.
How much does that work for that player? A million a year on a, you know, 6 year, 3 to 8 year deal? I mean, is it in the realm of possibility? Because I don't know if you remember, I think it was Mike Hoffman signed a PTO with St. Louis heading into camp. And it was because they had to wait for the start of the season to put somebody on LTIR. That created the space. Now, this is a little different scenario.
Yeah.
Because he was still able to come to camp, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how you can maybe make the numbers work, like depending on what everybody's asking for. A thought. No bad ideas, right? No bad ideas.
Yeah. Totally. Like, we're open to hearing them. But yeah, we talked about that in our Discord today about PTOing players or like just papering down ELCs. I mean, even if you have to send people down, it's an hour away as opposed to across the continent.
Right. Good point.
Well, but I mean, the paper isn't a move. Paper is just, it's just a registration in the office, and in the amount of time it takes to go and make the full loop, all you did is you pack your socks in your bag.
Yeah.
And
then pretend you like walk really slowly to the door. Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, it would be funny if someone thought they were being papered down and then they just didn't turn up in Abbotsford and they were like, why aren't you here? It's like, oh, I was really sent down. Okay.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, and again, well, there's time. I mean, we're realistically getting worried about something that we're a month away from camp-ish. Essentially two from the season-ish. I know it's a little bit less than that. So there's time to go. Speaking of the season, though, so it was announced at the expansion draft, and it made perfect sense that the Seattle Kraken's first home game happens to be against this team you might have heard of, the Vancouver Canucks.
Heard of them? Yep.
Is there an opportunity for a Vancouver Canucks fan to get a ticket to that game, or is that going to be the secondary market at this point? Presuming you can actually get across the border, which I think you can if we fly down. I think we can fly down to Seattle to watch. We can't actually
get dropped off in Lake Washington, do a puddle jumper thing. So,
yeah,
a seaplane. Do a seaplane from I don't think there's any tickets available. So you're all secondary market. And if you check the secondary market now, this is insane, by the way. It is, I don't think there's a ticket under $1,500, single ticket. So,
wow.
So, yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you my section.
It's a home opener.
Go ahead. For a brand new franchise.
It's a home opener. So,
yeah.
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 Against that closest team.
My tickets are $130 a piece. They're expensive to me. It's upper deck, center ice. And in my section, the lowest price, one is going for $2,200. The lowest ticket available is $2,200 in my section.
Plus US.
Which is like really gut wrenching. You're like, this is a
plus fees.
Keep in mind, go ahead.
Temptation. Like, I'm not suggesting you would, but like, You're like,
yeah.
I mean, literally, John has been working at this for like a decade, Chris.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. There was
I know.
The big thing is, I was always like, you know, if I don't get tickets, I just want to go to opening night. Like, that was always my kind of, like, if somehow it doesn't work out, if I don't win the lottery by getting in the top of the list. But keep in mind that these are early prices that they've listed, right? And so people might be just being like, this is my exit price. And so they're putting up for $2,000 a ticket. So I imagine they'll start to come down as we get closer, but we'll see. I don't know. The next time they play the Canucks down here, have you looked at that?
I have not. I knew the first game.
Yeah.
Well, outside of preseason where they have, I think it's in, is it Tacoma?
They're playing, Seattle, Everett, and then, Spokane. So they're playing the Canucks in Spokane.
I think you're right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember I actually looked, because I was like, do I fly down to a preseason? Because again, flying was possible. And when I crunched the numbers, it's like, am I really interested in going to a preseason game? Like,
yeah.
The glamour really wore off quick.
Yeah.
When I started looking at the numbers.
Yeah. But the second time they play the Canucks in Seattle is actually January 1st, which I thought was a very interesting time for a game, right? I believe they had the Winter Classic still that day. But the game, and they announced the times last week, and that's going to be 7 p.m. on New Year's Day, which I thought was, you know, maybe it's the start of a tradition. You know, you never know with something like that. Yeah.
Historically, the Canucks have had a traditional matchup against the Philadelphia Flyers on New Year's Eve.
Okay.
For some reason or another, like, this is a sort of a historical thing. Okay. It hasn't happened all that frequently recently, but I do like the idea of a tradition. And when I saw that it was going to be a 7 p.m. start on New Year's Day, I was shocked. For one very important reason, U.S. television hockey seems to enjoy afternoons.
Yeah, but so, they don't want to put it up against the...
No, I know, but like... Yeah, you can work it's the 7 p.m. on a holiday.
So it's not going to be on national TV, right? Or at least down here.
Okay.
So, I mean, I wouldn't think so for that same reason. Or maybe it is, but it's nothing special. But I do think they don't want anything to compete too much with the Winter Classic on a national level. They want that to be the only game on a national level on. So people are like, oh, if I'm going to sit down and watch one game, it's going to be the Winter Classic. Now, there is also a lot of college football that day down here, which might kind of distract people
There's
away
like
from
462 bowl games.
Yeah. But they've kind of like spread those out recently, but those are sometimes the big games on the first. So that should be interesting. But I just like the idea of maybe every year we play the Canucks on the first, and next year it's in Vancouver or
I like that
or whatever. I thought that would be
they're
cool.
Never going to give us an outdoor game again because of how badly the Heritage Classic went. So
I went there. I was at that game.
Were you? Great. I was visiting Vancouver, so I was down the street. But
Luongo's last game, right?
Yes, the
infamous tour.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
The
thing about this,
it was a debacle is what it was.
Well, like BC plays for an outdoor game, like, or like a stadium, like it may, there's little sense in my mind, like it, but anyhow, regardless, Eddie Lack, I think as much as he probably wasn't maybe keen on it not being a Luongo game to start, cause I believe he's even said that he was shocked that he was starting, like he couldn't, thought maybe Louis was hurt. No one recalls that it appears that Eddie had an issue that he couldn't deal with based on the white.
Yeah, like a Luongo incident, style incident.
Yes. If you look back at pictures, you'll notice.
Ooh, what I got to check this out. Yeah.
Just look at the camera angle from the net and you'll totally understand. Okay. So the thing that sort of blew my mind is that the first match game between the Seattle Kraken and Vancouver here in Vancouver, you have to wait until December 27th. Like, sure, maybe you got tickets under the stocking and it's the first game you go to for the Canucks post Christmas break, but it's kind of weird that it's taking that long to get these two teams. Like, I totally buy into the home opener in Seattle, get Vancouver in there. And I'm not suggesting Seattle has to be up here for the Canucks home opener, but to have to go that long.
Yeah.
Before they play again seems weird.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I worry that they try to force these rivalries, you know, everybody says obviously Vancouver, and I think it's going to happen, but let's not force it. Right. Like let's just make, hopefully they meet in the playoffs or there's an offer sheet involved and all of a sudden there's a kind of a bitter rivalry. But, you know, I think, Vegas, everyone's like, oh, they're going to be rivals with the Coyotes. And they're, you know, and I think that was the home opener was against the Coyotes in Vegas. And, you know, that went nowhere. Right. And now Arizona wasn't very good and Vegas all of a sudden was good. So they had bigger fish to fry and a couple of matches in the playoffs against the Sharks. And all of a sudden there's a rivalry. Right. So I think we need to get this rivalry going with a playoff matchup before we force it or like just
organic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. Cause we've talked about this before, how like the Minnesota Wild, like still consider the Canucks rivals. And it's just from a Vancouver standpoint,
it's more Boston, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't it more
like, Boston? Well, from a Vancouver standpoint, it's Boston number one for sure.
Yeah.
And then like Edmonton, Calgary, and then maybe Chicago. After that,
well, I think Chicago would have been up there.
Now
I mean, ultimately, Vancouver's rival is always the team that owns them in the playoffs.
Yeah,
right. Who owned them last in the playoffs? Kind of.
Yeah. So Calgary was like big.
Colorado,
2015.
Yeah, but we've But I was going to say, like, Detroit beat the Canucks many years in a row. Colorado beat the Canucks. Like, the Canucks find themselves always running up against the teams that are stringing together many years of success. But, no, the Minnesota-Wild rivalry was actually bigger in Minnesota. Like, Wild fans heard Todd Bertuzzi tell them not to buy tickets to a game, and they took that so personal that apparently the Vancouver Canucks are still to this day a top three rival. Yeah. And I could not tell you that the Wild even registers on
the map especially here. Since the Northwest Division doesn't exist anymore. It's just
right. I know Minnesota doesn't like Chicago.
Yeah.
But I think that's just living in the shadow of the Blackhawks during their heyday recently. That, and maybe St. Louis, but at the same time, like, I think they're just looking for rivalries.
Yeah.
Right.
They're just trying to
manufacture them. Yeah. Yeah. Don't tell Darren that. Hopefully Darren doesn't listen. Yeah.
Well, we actually asked Darren that question. Is Vancouver still a rival of the Wild? And he said he actually can see it. Maybe not as much as it once was, but there's definitely still some emotion attached to it. Whereas here in Vancouver, it's like, oh, the Wild are in town. Are you going to the game now?
Yeah. It's like one of the few that, we'll skip it.
Yeah. So, is what it is. Oh, but, a few things that we wanted to sort of toss your direction, just because it's obviously pertinent to all the teams, is obviously within this next season being potentially a full season, one that we have not seen in 2 years, obviously, due to the pandemic, is that details of how the NHL is going to manage the pandemic are trickling up. So the NHL had sent a memo recently saying that the vaccination requirements to its teams is that any person whose job, role, position, access entails or entitles them to have personal interactions within 12 feet with club hockey operations personnel, including players, are required to be fully vaccinated. In our Discord, it was pointed out that it was a very carefully worded statement not to potentially say players must get vaccinated, which is not something we've seen any sort of major North American sports league do. However, the language has said if your team doesn't reach a threshold, and by the way, a game gets canceled because of this, forfeits, fines, big deals. Do you think the NHL is going to take a similar approach to, let's say, what the NFL has taken?
Man, it's such a tough subject to address, right? I want them to do whatever is going to get the most people vaccinated, and so we can all be safer in these environments. I like the idea of, okay, if you don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine, but every 3 days you need to show up a negative COVID test, right? And at the end of the day, like, that's such a hassle. It's just like, F it. Why don't I just kind of get a shot? Because hopefully that's what people do. Because if, you know, not to get too much into it, because I know it can be touchy sometimes, but if we're in a room and 100% of us are vaccinated, we really don't have anything to worry about. Right.
Yeah.
That's just the math.
Yeah.
And
you would think from a collective team standpoint, which is what the NHL is supposed to be, you know, team culture over individuals. And it has its downsides, but, like, you know, some people are going home to, like, sick kids, and if they're playing with a teammate that's not vaccinated because they watch too much Fox News, like, that's a problem.
Yeah. So whatever it's going to take to get more people vaccinated and keep people safer.
Yes.
I think that's the way they should do it. And so, you know, I'm okay with a little, you know, and people have a choice, right? If staff has a choice, they don't have to be employed there, right? If they if they don't want a vaccine, that's fine. You have a choice, and you don't have to work there. That's your choice. But maybe I'm a little too Pollyanna about this stuff, but I really hope it works itself out, and I think maybe we'll start to see the tides turn a little bit more in the direction we need it to go at a faster rate.
Right.
I feel that the NHL statement is set up. So, like, the NFL came out and they made a statement that focused on players. I mean, and again, the players associations vary from league to league. I'd say that the NHL Players Association tends to be a little more better organized, not necessarily as maybe as powerful as some of the professional leagues, but they tend to hold
like unified
the letter of the, unified and sort of hold the letter of the law a little bit closer. But the NFL has seen coaches, coordinators essentially lose their employment because the NFL has said if you're on the field and you're
interacting,
interacting, you're vaccinated. Like, it's not like you, like on the sort of team operations side, it's a you must be. And I think the NHL has done that by saying, well, if you're going to be within this particular distance, you have to be. Now, if you're going to have a coach who's going to be sitting up there in the box, who's not, they're not interacting or what have you, like, it's giving the teams the flexibility. Whereas the NFL had just sort of said no, like,
yeah,
must be vaccinated.
Right.
And they've left it open for the players, which is, I mean, there are NFL players who have been quite vocal about, well, this is my choice and you're going to punish me and I'm going to lose money because my team can't.
Yeah, it's their choice. That is their choice. Right. If they want to lose money, that's fine. Right.
And that's the thing. Like, for me, what are you talking about? Like, that's you're an adult. You've made a choice and that's fine. Yeah.
But choices have consequences, right?
Yep. That's right.
Well, that's the part I think people forget. And I was going to sort of then bring up, like, the Winnipeg Jets, and I don't know of any other team in the NHL yet who's come out as strongly as Winnipeg has, but Winnipeg has essentially said, you want to come and watch a game in our building? You got to prove you're fully vaccinated. Now, the problem here is that in Canada, as much as I think in the United States is still an issue, kids can't get vaccinated, right. And the Jets have not yet clarified how that situation is dealt with.
Right.
Right. Which I think I would suspect they'd advise to say, okay, well, no, like,
if you're eligible, you must be. Yeah.
I think it'll be 12 plus. Like, they would do it. Cause I think at least in BC, if you're 12 plus, you can get vaccinated.
And the Canucks are considering this. And I'm actually kind of surprised that they haven't made a decision at considering they were one of the teams that got hit. Last year. So they would have this as a, not only as an organization, but like the players themselves have had an experience that they probably do not wish to.
Yeah. Through. And you would think with the, like, not just performance and actual cost that it had, but the like morale cost that it took on the organization, it was pretty big. Like, you would think they'd come out pretty strongly. What I was going to say on the NHLPA is they don't have like a great history of like necessarily protecting like their players and individual players. So maybe that, but maybe that will actually be good in this scenario because they'll just go along with the league position and everyone gets vaccinated. Who knows?
You know, I think we'll see a lot more of these announcements, how a lot of these teams are handling it in September. You know, like, it's such a dead time really for NHL news. Kind of this is a kind of a weird year, but like August in general, a lot of people. So like, probably all decision makers aren't like online and really ready to kind of make an assessment here. What's interesting from the Seattle perspective is, you know, this arena is being developed and built by Tim Lewicki's organization, Oakview Group, and they've got, they manage a couple other arenas. So they're like really big kind of players in the arena business. And they also are doing the New York Islanders new arena in Belmont that comes online in November. Like, they're going to be focusing on this probably more than most. You know, it's not just Winnipeg, who's like True North probably manages and operates that arena on their own, but it's going to be interesting. I'm really waiting for a little bit more of that to come out of the Oakview Group. And because it's going to really impact Seattle, and as they're really bringing this whole arena online, you know, and they've been pouring money into this thing. And they need to start getting some of that money back.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a lot of concerts being booked starting in the fall. So it's going to be interesting. I'm really looking for what their guidance is. So,
yeah. So this new New York Islanders arena, you're going to be able to see the ice from the seats?
Most of the seats. Okay. I'm just kidding.
You could see the ice in Brooklyn. It's just how much of you want to see it at any point in time.
You have to see the whole ice. Like, that costs money.
Like, yeah.
On the expensive seats, you can see the full ice.
Hey, you ever been to a game in the Saddledome, John?
I have not been to the Saddle Dome. I've been to Edmonton. So, I've been to Winnipeg, but not the Saddle Dome. Okay.
If you ever go to a game in Calgary, and I mean, it's part of the experience. Try to get a seat up on the top of the saddle. I mean, yes, you're well off the ice. You've pretty much walked all the way up to Red Deer if you sit on a particular side of the stadium. But because of the shape of the saddle, you actually only get to see right to sort of the corner of the boards. You don't actually get to see the players bench or the penalty boxes if you sit that far up. They actually have put TVs up there. It's an interesting design.
That's the thing. The Saddle Dome's there are so many problems.
This is a hockey stadium
with Rogers, but there's a good view from every single seat in the arena. Yeah. I've sat in the cheapest seats. My normal seats are up pretty much in the nosebleeds, and we stand up the whole game, so it might be slightly different. But
hoodlums.
With the hoodlums,
I have been to Nassau. Where the Islanders before they remodeled but I can't imagine it changed. But I was in the corner, last row, couldn't see the scoreboard, and there was no kind of I literally you could not see this scoreboard or any kind of scoreboard device. It was pretty brutal.
You can't see, in Calgary you can't see the scoreboard either.
It seems like that. But if you're missing part of the benches, that's a bigger deal.
But.
Yeah, you can see all of the ice surface. That's the guarantee.
I mean, I kind of wish I'd been to the Joe, but also it was very old and crumbly by the end.
Yeah.
A lot of history, but definitely past its best.
Anywho, it's been a solid show. As always, we keep you much longer than the hour we tell you are going to keep you. So thank you for obviously accommodating us. For those of our listeners that have yet to actually tune in, I'm going to tell you right now, you're missing out. You had Cale Fleury on just this past week.
Yeah, I had Cale Fleury on. We've had Brendan Dillon on, he's from the Vancouver area. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. It kind of helped me get through the pandemic, to be in all honesty. It was nice to have that kind of going through and having a reason to kind of check in and kind of talking. We got a lot of guests during the pandemic too. But it helped me honestly get through. So, and it's great. It's fun. It's always fun to talk hockey. As much as I study it and read it and play it, I always eager to do more. So I appreciate you guys having me on, because it's fun to talk hockey, and I'm excited to see you two down here eventually, whether it be this year or the following. It doesn't matter. We'll figure it out, or maybe just come for the atmosphere and we pregame somewhere. But either way, I'm really hoping you both make it down here, because that means good things too, right? That things have opened up, and we can gather and stuff like that. So that's cool too.
Yeah, that's Steve.
I was gonna say,
go ahead.
Probably a better chance for you to come up here. We can go and buy some beers and wigs at the pint before a game than us possibly coming down to check out either the Angry Beaver or what's the name of the Kraken's official bar now?
The 32 bar. The 32. Yeah, because I don't know if you saw this little bit of news. They called it the Kraken Bar and Grill and then got sued by the Kraken Bar, which is a total dive punk rock bar that I've been to before, and it is dead. And it's just insane the hole in the wall this place is. But that's part of the deal, and part of the lawsuit was they were almost getting pissed off that hockey fans would come in and patronize or come in and buy drinks because that's punk rock to be like, no, we don't want your sports fans here. That's get out of here.
Too mainstream, so. Making money.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to go back to what Chris said, Sound of Hockey is a great podcast. We always big it up on our show. Have had some great guests of late, but across their whole run. I have a small bone to pick that I was driving home listening to the latest episode, and the beep that you guys use for the swearing is a car horn. So that was a swear word of some sort, and I was just like, oh my god, what happened? looking at me in the car, almost causing a car crash.
I'll apologize. That was Darren.
Yeah.
That was Darren.
It's always Darren, pretty much.
He swore and he does the editing. So it was like a double,
yeah,
a double whammy. So yeah. So we apologize for that. I'll make sure we issue an apology on the next episode because that's not that's uncalled for.
Like,
never even thought about that.
I was gonna say,
never even thought about that.
Vancouver traffic accidents happen frequently enough anyway. Yeah. So
safety first. Safety first. That's our motto. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I mean, it. You mentioned sort of, you know, being thankful to join us. I mean, we're thankful you and Andy and Darren have taken the time to join Ann and I. I mean, we're obviously stoked for the rivalry, but for us, it's really about the relationship, the connection, the fact that we've already got sort of a penciled in opportunity to get together for some drinks over a little puck. And obviously, when that will happen, you're right. This year, next year, sometime, maybe by Zoom. Still,
that's cool. We might want to talk about the first game after, right? Like maybe we'll do a little brief Zoom
that we can put on your
We can all get on, have the discussion. We can put it on both our podcasts. That would be kind of interesting scenario. But hey, let's make it happen. No bad ideas. No bad ideas.
No bad ideas.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm a little bit concerned that you shared this on our show because we do have others that listen to this, and suddenly you might be like double booked with like Canucks conversation and C4. I just want.
Hey, I'm a C4 loyalist. Now that you're all on the positive tip, and it's all about the playoffs, I'm in.
There you go.
Awesome. John, if every one of our listeners who for some reason hasn't found you yet, where can they find you and the show?
Well, NHL2Seattle is my Twitter handle. And then we also have a Twitter handle for Sound of Hockey. And soundofhockey.com, Sound of Hockey on all podcast things. Not a whole lot of Canucks talk, but
it's okay.
That'll heat up. That'll change. So anyway, great to have you again. Awesome to be on this show. It's fun. Good conversation. Love talking hockey in the middle of August. There's nothing I'd rather be doing.
Well, you know, thanks again for coming on board. I hope you'll accommodate us for a few, groundskeeping items we need to take care of. First and foremost, I don't know. I think you guys do this. If you get a review, you obviously, you know, thank the person who shared it. We do the same thing. Now, it's just I find when I listen to your show, they're just positive reviews. Our show occasionally doesn't always get positive reviews.
Well, let's be clear. We only share the 5 stars. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, I recently gave love to all of the maybe not so good reviews on Twitter. I had a night. But the most recent one that we received, which was off of Apple Podcasts, titled Not Good, 1 Star, which kind of leads me to believe that they were forced to give us one, from VJKXOXO, which I had to read it out because I didn't know how to pronounce that. Can't get over the negativity. Terrible analysis. And so for that, I must apologize. I'm just heartbroken because that came a week after our most positive show in a long time.
Still some work to do, it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
Still some work to do.
Yeah.
But we will read out all reviews, good, bad, somewhere in between. In fact, it's probably a good way to like get advertising in. Like if we got a review from some guy named John that said, greatest podcast, second only, you know, Sound of Hockey, I would read that out verbatim and I wouldn't question it. So
greatest Seattle Kraken podcast based out of Vancouver. What about that from John?
Yeah.
There we go. The other thing as well is if our listeners support us on Patreon, patreon.com/C4podcast, obviously there's a variety of different tiers available, gets you extra access. We occasionally record a pre-show. We won't be doing one this week because again, to connect with John, we had to sort out our schedule a little bit, but every 2 weeks we also have Off the Rails where Anna and I talk about all sorts of fun stuff. We actually talked about reviews in our latest episode of OTR, not our reviews in general.
There's a wild story in there. So if we're on the fence about signing up.
I almost had Anna cry. I was horrified. There were tears in her eyes. But to learn more, C4podcast is or patreon.com/C4podcast. And I do need to give a shout out to Jay, who recently signed up to support us. Everyone sort of probably knows Jay in Discord. He's the cantankerous argumentative person, but he also supports our show. And I am due to give Jay a shout out for doing so. He's exclusively listening in.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
But no, yeah, thanks, John, for thanking Jay. But obviously, you can find us online, c4podcast.com. You can review us and rate us in any podcast application that allows for it. You can find us on Twitter at @thec4podcast. And if you haven't done so already, join C4 Discord. It's discord.io/c4podcast. Whether you're a Canucks fan or a Kraken fan, you're more than welcome. How welcome are Kraken fans? I went and created a channel in Discord exclusively for our Kraken fans, Pike Place,
where we talk about coffee.
Well, someone did ask that. And I said, you can talk about coffee, or fish, or the Seattle Kraken, any work.
But we've actually had a few Kraken fans swing through and join in. Not too many have actually participated in the conversation. Because, again, we're a Canucks-focused podcast, so Gate 16 is where the Canucks chatter happens. But we want to be welcoming to Kraken and Canucks fans. And as long as there's, you know, friendly rivalry, nothing over, you know, too over the top, it's a good place to get together. And again, you don't even have to be a Kraken fan or Canucks fan to join in. You can be a fan of any team except for the Boston Bruins, and we're okay with that.
Yeah.
So thanks again, John, for joining us. You can find him online at NHL2 Seattle. That is T-O, not the number two. Probably going to rebrand to NHL in Seattle at any point. You can find them at soundofhockey.com. And on behalf of Anna Forsyth, 84603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, I'm going to sign this episode off with We Out.